Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Behind the Racket Pod, the podcast taking you behind the racket with today's top tennis players and biggest issues facing the sport.
Behind the Racket is a community to give fans and players in the world of tennis the opportunity to open up like they have never done before.
Visit BehindTheRacket.com for the latest stories, merch, as well as direct links to all of the latest podcasts. It can also be found on iTunes, Google Play, Pandora, Stitcher, and wherever you find your podcasts. Download the episodes and make sure to leave a review.
And we want you to be a part of the conversation. Find me at NoahRubin33 or Mike at MikeCTennis on all forms of social media. You can also learn more at BehindTheRacket.com or MikeCTennis.com.
Special thanks to my sponsor, New Balance. Visit their latest shoes and styles at NewBalance.com and learn more about their program of giving back at #NBGivesBack.
You can also help support the podcast by visiting patreon.com/behindtheracketpod and receive rewards from our travels around the world. And now.
So, last week we were going to have another episode, but then things in my body exploded. And so I'm very sorry about that.
You look good, though.
Yeah.
Actually, somehow, better.
It's a pretty crazy thing when you don't, and you and I talked about this off the podcast, somehow I was at a weight before the surgery. Things happened. I didn't eat for about 24 hours because I basically couldn't. And I gained 7 pounds. And I just don't know how that happened. I barely drank any water just because of medication and all that. And
I think God was just playing an ironic joke on you. And I found it funny.
I mean, it is funny.
Right.
The whole situation has been funny. I can barely sit down. My daughter mocks me. She's 6 and a half and she mocks how slow I'm walking. It has been a really interesting week and a half. I got to be honest. So I'm going to be in Orlando. You are not. I'm going to be in Orlando and Tallahassee over the next couple of weeks. I am super excited to be working again. I am not super excited of the mockery that should occur at my expense of the fact that I'm walking so slow. And B, let's be blunt about this here. It's hot and muggy down there this time of the year. And I got to be honest, after recovering from surgery and all that, that's the part I'm not looking forward to, is walking slowly in like 120% humidity.
I'm actually just thinking about you. You struggle sitting for 8 hours, and now you're going to be sitting for 8 hours post-surgery. Right. That's my concern, is your body just crumbles under that pressure.
Yeah, it's gonna be tricky. I'll bring a donut with me.
Right. So if we don't hear you speaking on the live streaming, we'll call for
help.
Just
realize I'm laying down somewhere, and it's fine.
You're just the mic is on the floor.
I need physio.
We need a physio above court one, please.
Which player?
Above court one.
That's for Cation.
Yes, we need it for the fat guy up top who's talking too much.
But thank you. There have been a lot of people who have reached out and sent texts and Twitter messages. I appreciate it. Thank you. It will be fine. It was not life-threatening. It was just extraordinarily painful. Thank you as well, young fella, for listening to me scream at about 11:30 in the p.m. as I'm in the emergency room.
Just a little bit of help, a little bit of nudging along there.
Well, it was one of those situations I knew you were still awake at that point, and then when it was 2 in the morning, I was texting my friend in Australia right before I got wheeled into surgery, and I appreciate her as well. But we're going to be okay. Everything's going to be fine someday. And I actually found myself today, Noah. I found myself really wanting to go out and hit tennis balls. Mm. I know you don't have that feeling anymore, but like I just looked outside. It's 75 and a little windy today in Tulsa, and I was just like, man, I want to just go hit some tennis balls.
But your body can't explode right now. No, exactly. Believe me, on the tournament side, do I have that right now? Not necessarily, but yeah. On the actual just playing side, 150%. I would, you know, I've been getting back out with the ankle, trying to push it to see how it's feeling. But just hitting tennis balls in, like, we've had 65-degree weather. It's, like, yeah. Perfect, a little windy at times as well. But just getting out there and hitting tennis balls, it's so nice. Like, it's just, yeah. You forget, you know, that just the simple aspect of it. And maybe once your body is able to, you and I can, we could just at least work on your back end a little bit.
After surgery and not playing for most of the winter and then surgery,
it can't get worse.
There's going to be I'm just saying there's a lot of stuff that's going to need some help immediately thereafter. But yeah, I'm excited about that. So yeah, you are out of Orlando and Tallahassee, which is obviously too bad.
Yeah.
Was looking forward to seeing you a little bit. I think I want to kind of hint at this. You are going to reach out to him, but I want to get Paolo Lorenzi on the podcast next week.
Mm-hmm.
That's my hope. So I don't have direct access like you do. I know you and Paolo have that connection, but he knows who I am. He likes me.
Yeah.
You've seen that in Australia a year ago. You saw that he was just, hey, it was a really nice moment. But
if Paolo doesn't like you as a person or anybody, I'm saying that is, you just didn't make it then.
Yes.
Then I don't like you. That, like, I wish I could bring Paolo around with me. And
yes.
If he doesn't like you, I don't like you. Like that, yes. You have to meet Paolo's standards before you cross the boundary, because that is probably the most likable guy on tour.
100%.
I mean, just an unbelievable and the complete opposite of us. He is just a all-around, loves tennis, loves to travel, loves everything he's done, and just is so positive. God, I want to be a better person around him.
I know. I'm actually, the question I'm going to ask him is, and I'll just tell you this ahead of time,
right,
and then
now,
we'll start talking. What does Noah Rubin need to do to find the love of tournament play again? Or how could that
Stop
happen?
Using
because
me. You're using me.
I've been using you for sex for years. Anyways.
There's nowhere to go from there.
There is.
Yeah.
And we're going to go directly to Miami
because
the sex pot that is Jannik Sinner came up just one match short of his first Master Series win. But I think Hubi Hurkacz, another guy who's kind of like Paolo, like everybody seems to love him. He seems like one of those good guys. I don't think you don't seem as enthralled by him in his tennis necessarily. Is that an accurate assessment?
I want to say that, and I guess everybody's giving Opelka credit right now, and we're all going back to his interview in Australia. I think I underestimated, for the size he is, because people don't know how, you know, tall and lanky, I underestimated his athleticism.
Okay.
And I think that's the truth. Watching him play a little bit in Del Rey this year as well. It's subtle. It's very subtle, so you don't understand. So, you know, what he does very well is he takes inches away from you. Takes inches, hits the ball very clean. So when he's taking inches, that, like, he does kind of that Federer where he knows where he's going to be relative to the baseline. And then from there, he's just taking a little bit more time away, a little bit more time. And his shot-making ability is very impressive. But at the same time, for a guy that I don't want to mess up his height. Do you have a height number by any chance?
I don't know.
Okay. I mean, I want to say 6'2", 6'3", maybe even 6'4", maybe.
I'll look while you finish your point.
But extremely athletic, you know, will get some balls, sliding on hard court, you know, really covering a lot of ground. That's been probably the most impressive. What are we looking at?
6'5".
6'5", yeah. Again, you know, somebody at that height, you know, sliding around the court, you know, shot-making ability, I underestimated it. I really did. And I think he's just a really sweet person. He's just very kind. You know, from the behind the racket interview, you know, whether you thought it was the most entertaining interview I've done, you just can tell that this is a really just kind individual.
He's genuine.
Yeah, he's genuine. So, you know, whether you think he's incredibly interesting or not, or great, it doesn't, he's just a good person.
Yes.
And I think
he is
a
media darling.
Yes.
Like, the ATP media people, I know they absolutely adore him.
And I get it. And I totally get it. I think, you know, I think he's going to grow into his personality a little bit more through being in the spotlight, winning these tournaments. And I'm curious to see, you know, how he comes into his own a little bit.
It's a really interesting, you know, kind of big picture question about entertaining versus rock solid in terms of your stylistically, right? Like, you know, you've got Gael Monfils. Congratulations on the engagement, obviously, but you've got players like that, Nick Kyrgios, yes. Versus players like maybe Jannik Sinner and Hubi Hurkacz, who are maybe not going to wow you. They're not going to have that sizzle, whatever it might be, but they are just so darn good at what they do, and they do it incredibly well. And it's just that interesting dynamic that allows fandoms for different types of styles.
Yeah. No, I'm curious how this evolves. Obviously, Hubie is a little bit older. Sinner being 19 years old, it has a lot of time to kind of, you know, the fact that this is the first one since been like 10 years. No, it's been, over 10 years since a teenager was in the finals of a Masters. So, you know, looking at this right now, Hubert has a little bit of flair. I will say he has that ability to hit the tweeners, hit the behind the back, and it is impressive. But I think we're finding this away from, you know, Dennis and Felix Auger-Aliassime, like guys like that are flair-like, are going to look athletic. You know, we're also going to come with the guys that, you know, have that ability, but will have a very stable career. And that's not saying a stable 50 in the world. This is saying stable top 10, top 15, and their level of play will always be there. And I think, yes we see Jannik Sinner hitting forehands at 120 miles per hour, but his game is, he knows what he's going to do, and he's going to do it over and over again. And you saw that in Binghamton when you were Lexington or Binghamton?
Both.
When
he,
you know,
lost in the quarters of Binghamton and won Lexington.
Okay. And you saw that, and you called that earlier on, and you said, this guy's good. You know, the ball-striking ability is there. But again, is he going to wow you with every shot? No, but you're going to be like, this is a very fucking good tennis player.
Yes. Yeah, and Sebastian Korda, I think, it falls in that type of line as well. He's, 64, I think, in today's ranking, something like that. He moved up into the top 70 in the world.
And that one, quickly, I will give credit to Eubanks. I never give credit to Eubanks because I just don't like him as a person. But he called Korda 2 years ago, almost, at this point, saying, you have to watch this guy. And I think that was one going into another topic a little bit. And you can attest to this by, you know, through the Challenger tour and seeing players. Is he followed kind of a system that his team put in place for him, saying, we're going to play futures, we're going to do this, and it doesn't matter if we win or lose, we're going to become the player we're supposed to be.
Yeah, it's a really interesting thought because I posted that on Twitter, and then, you know, just realizing, Noah, that if we're being honest about it, though, he comes at it from a point of luxury.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, obviously, and I'm taking nothing away from Sebi because he works his ass off, right? But he had that ability because of the family. Mm-hmm. He did not have to worry necessarily about the finances that go behind all of that, right? Something that is different for you.
Yes.
You know, for just for an example, and you guys are obviously different players. I'm not comparing the two of you, but the fact that he had that financial comfortability to just take time and grind futures for a year without having to worry about coaches. And if it took 2 years, they could continue to do that and make that progress. That's not necessarily the same for you, for Francis, a couple of years ago. I mean, you guys had, there was just that maybe a little bit more, you have to get through this a little bit faster than it was for Sebi. And he worked so hard and has come into his game very well with that time. But he also did have some things that other people didn't have.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the I think it takes kind of the tennis example to another level. I've been into F1 for a while. I know people are watching it because of Netflix. But when you're looking, when you're looking at the drivers, it almost stays within the families. You know, you're like, okay, Charles Leclerc. Okay, there's another Leclerc coming in Formula 3. So you look at that and you're like, these guys will make it. How many other guys are at that level that just don't have the opportunity, that can't build a team around them? And again, this is absolutely nothing away from Korda, because he has probably some of the best ball striking I've seen almost in the U.S. Could be in the best in the world right now, ball striking wise. And I know a lot of people would agree with that. So not taking anything away, but how many players, you know, could be great ball strikers and just, you know, had the pressure of, I need this, I have this year and that's it, or I have 2 years and that's it, you know, where that 2 years is not the same 2 years that Sebi has, because everything is pressurized. Everything is at this another scale of, okay, if I don't do well in this tournament, what happens the next tournament? And it's just a snowball from there. So it begs the question. And this is something that, you know, within our tour and my partner Scott talks about a lot, is what does that tennis look like if you take away the pressure of having to feed your family? You know, what does that tennis look like if you take away the pressure? And people will say there's a reason why some players are there and can handle that pressure, yes or no. But I love the pressures when it comes to competitive nature of how many Grand Slams or me beating you or being the better player. But when you're worried about feeding your family at 150, 250 in the world, you know, I think it begs the question of, you know, how many players are out there that could be the next Sebi Korda that just can't.
Yeah, and this was actually what I posed on when I was talking about it on Twitter. Like I thought back to, you know, somebody who we talked about or we talked with last summer, Philip Simmons. Mm. There was a generation of players that Philip was involved in.
A lost generation.
Scotty O, Scoville Jenkins.
Cox.
I think it was yes.
Yeah.
There was a good amount of players in that era who, part of it has to be obviously the American, we need another American male star to be up there at the top, and just kind of push them to get through these steps, and then instead of allowing them to grow at their own individual pace, and that's, I think that's ultimately what we are talking about here, right? Each person has their own pace that they need to go through to optimize themselves and their own career. Mm-hmm. You know, Sebi's going to get there because he did have the ability and came from a wealthy family, a very well-known family, and incredible genes.
So I was going to say, some good genetics.
some genes are there, right? He's also incredibly hardworking. That's part of what the family has instilled in him. But his path, it seems like they were able to optimize his path so that he could optimize his success. I don't know that that's always the case in the sport of tennis, that you just have all of that coming together to a lot. You know, you're somebody who, frankly, had you gotten, you know, not gotten injured over the last couple of years, you could have had a different path that would have allowed you to optimize what you needed to be to get to where you are, right? And that could be said for so many different players. And I, again, just my history of the game, seeing some of those players come through the challengers in 07, 08, 09, back in Champaign, and seeing how they were just so tired and just felt so much pressure at the age of 19, 20, 21. Right. It's just like, God, we didn't allow them to grow and maybe become the player that they could have been at 26, 27.
Right. I mean, you talk about, and I think a little bit of a different perspective where I not that this is going to happen by any means, but I laugh and I say, you know, if I took 3 years off, I'm still in the same shape, I'm working out, I'm playing, I took 3 years off, like 28 to 35, I could have a career then. Like, you know, a lot of players do. There's a lot of players that have come at that age and had their best tennis, whether it's, you know, Feliciano Lopez and Goffin. And some of these guys, obviously, they've been around the top of the game for a while, but made their true breakthroughs at those ages. You know, thinking back to players that are 19, 20, I've been a part of that group. You know, and I was a fortunate one. I was one of the 0.001% that even got to where I was. So you think about all the other players that had so much pressure, whether it was even at the ITF level, collegiate level that just said, hey, I have a finite amount of time to really push this forward. And there's this, utter lack of stability that if one thing takes a wrong turn, if I have an injury, what I thought during my injuries was, where is my next dollar coming from?
Yeah,
so I can make sure. So everything, when people say, oh, those are breaks, you can relax, get ready. It's the most anxious time for me. It's what am I going to do to make sure I hit the ground running, because I can't waste another day. And then the first few months coming back, a 4-month injury is a 8-month turnaround, where I'm getting back to my tennis that I played prior to it. So, I think you can attest to this and your experiences is, does there need to be a culture change within the sport, and what does that look like? Is that possible in our system right now?
Right. That's the great question.
Yeah.
I had hopes at the beginning, when we started thinking about, okay, sport's going to come together, ATP, WTA United and all of that. And
we don't even have an app.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I think it's going to be really interesting. I think especially here in the US, just how we're going to, with all of the changes with the USTA over the last couple of years, what that strategy is going to look like over the next couple of years, how they're going to continue to implement what they want to do. I think they're working to get a little bit more. They just obviously are starting to work with the ITA in terms of the collegiate development, which I think is a great start, frankly. Mm-hmm. Especially, I think, more so on the men's side, you're seeing more college players who are having very fruitful professional careers. It hasn't really done the same yet on the women's side. They're obviously, Jenny Brady being a great example where it can happen. But I think that partnership will pay off long term.
So
I don't know, man.
Question for you, though. We've had this idea, especially in the U.S., of we are looking for that Grand Slam champion. That's what we're gunning for right now. Do we change the culture and from the bottom up try to say, hey, how do we get just more people into the sport? How do we make it a more inviting, accessible? Obviously, this is something, I'm personally working towards, but, does that change? Do we stop having this antiquated mentality of looking for the one or fighting for that one? And I don't know, it puts so much pressure on the entire nation.
it's like you're in the headquarters of the USTA. I think that has been a constant battle for the USTA over the last couple of years. How is finding the next Serena? Is that how you get more, development into the sport? Or is it, the amount of people who've been playing tennis through this pandemic has been crazy, right? Yeah. And that's been awesome.
But we're not converting those numbers, though. That's what it's looking at. And, it just comes down to accessibility in the end, in all fronts, from juniors to pros. It's a tough situation. I mean, I know Rothenberg put up that poll of, just talking about, as a tennis fan, are you as engaged as you once were, due to the app situation of not having the same ATP WTA app? Are you at the same level, less? What platforms are you using to follow tennis? And I think 40% out of 3,000 votes said that they are following tennis less than before, which is not something we can look for. And I know for somebody that is, obviously we're both deeply involved, just not having the ATP WTA app, one, not following women's anywhere near as much as I would, because I barely use the new ATP app now, and then it doesn't have women's on it. So I use Rizaltina when I can and follow the people that I care about closely, but you can't follow the schedule of tennis right now. It's so difficult. I mean, we laughed, and obviously, we're not as deeply a part of it right now because U.S. doesn't have as many tournaments, and we're just coming back, but it's like, oh, and the Volvo Open's happening. Okay, we're back on clay, and we're back here. So there's just things being thrown, and again, it just seems like we're just kind of taking shots in the dark right now.
I am, that being said, super excited to be back on the road in a week. So
100%. I'm excited just to hear you, commentating these matches and having challenger matches, which it seems like a pretty decent level is going to be there these 2 weeks.
I think so too. Yeah. So. I want to make sure I talk a little bit about getting Bianca Andreescu back on the court as well.
Yeah.
Obviously unfortunate roll of the ankle. She was already, Ash Barty was playing phenomenal, facing a match point in her opener in Miami last week, and then rolling through that afterwards. But it made me conscious. Women's tennis is in such a good place.
It's so like No, it's so funny. Like, I was going to bring this up. I know we're almost at the end. But that's exactly, I wanted to bring that up 100% because I honestly think they're keeping tennis alive at a level that it shouldn't be at because of the personalities that the women's tennis has brought along between, you know, the Bartys, Osaka, Goffs and Andreescu. And it's incredible. I don't know, this is a tough thing to say. Obviously, we've kind of lacked the top three on the men's side right now with them not playing on a hiatus.
Yeah.
But I don't think we have those personalities right now on the men's side. It's a tough thing to say, but I really do think that the women's side is carrying the men's in terms of personality and, you know, just the personas that are on the women's side.
I think that's the right way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the right way to put it because, yes, you feel like you have a sense of Serena. You have that sense of Naomi. You have a sense of Ash Barty, you know, what she's like, and Bianca, her style. And, you know, obviously that's just kind of at the top, if you will. But, yeah, you outside of the big three on the men's side, you know, who's probably the most well-known player on the men's side outside of those three? I'd say Kyrgios.
And he's not playing. Like, this is funny. Like, Kyrgios is still being spoken about almost as much as, like, Hubert, who's won a Masters, and Kyrgios is still being spoken about without hitting a tennis ball. It's and this is nothing against, obviously, Serena's career, and I hope she doesn't. This is a compliment. She had the shoes that she had to, you know, that her predecessors had to fill were so large, but I feel like we're not missing it quite as much as I thought we would because of the personalities and personas that we have coming up on the women's. While I am worried about the men's side, I am worried about who is going to take the shoes of the Federer, Nadal, Djokovic, Murray. Like, these are four guys whether you hate or love them, all had very unique personalities that brought to the game and transcended tennis like no other player in the history ever had, probably, maybe since John McEnroe time. But those are scary shoes to fill. And again, the personalities reside with some of the older players. And I think, you know, we're going to give, you know, the younger players some time to come into their own. But that's nerve-wracking. I think the women's side has done an incredible job so far with that.
I completely agree. I think that's a good point to end it there. We did our first card break last night. I just realized Connor Mogul, who's a big supporter of ours, he texted me last minute to get in the break, and I forgot to put him in the break. So what do you think we should send him?
A smiley face text?
No, he sent money to get I got to figure out. I'm going to go through and sort out some things to send Connor
I'll
Mogul,
sign a picture of
me?
You in bed after surgery. I have a fantastic one. He'll love, I promise.
Do you want me to send a picture of my scar?
No. No. We have to pay him for that.
Okay.
And we can't afford that.
So this coming week, again, I will be down in Orlando. Our hope is to get Paolo Lorenzi on the show for next week. If you have any questions that you would like to have answered by Paolo Lorenzi, shoot me a DM on Instagram, Twitter, whatever it might be. I'd love to hear some of your thoughts. So we will get to that. Thank you as well to all of our Patreon supporters. We have started sending out those Patreon autographed tennis balls. When Noah and I are again in the same place, maybe Tallahassee, maybe if you come to train for a little bit, we're going to record some of our video messages that we are due to send you guys. And then hopefully when we get to a slam in the next couple of months, we're going to get some of those keychains sent out and postcards as well. So for Noah, Mike signing off. We'll talk to you next week.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
The show might be over, but the conversation isn't. Join us on social media at NoahRubin33, at MikeCTennis, and at Behind the Racket.
Expect new episodes every Monday or Tuesday. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. It really helps us expand and reach more listeners as we take you behind the racket.